Welcome back to Burnout and Breakthroughs, where we talk about the messy truths behind nonprofit work and how we can keep caring without completely wrecking ourselves in the process. I'm Samantha, and today's episode is one that I've been circling around for a while. We are going to talk about the myth of the selfless servant and why boundaries matter. Now, if you listened to last week's episode, you remember that we closed with a really important reminder that burnout is not a badge of honor. We talked about how so many of us wear exhaustion like it proves our passion and how harmful that story is. Today, we're taking that one step further because a lot of us have been explicitly, implicitly, or subtly trained to believe that the best kind of nonprofit worker is the one who will give in until they're empty. Does this sound a little bit familiar? Maybe you relate to yourself, or you can think of a coworker who you know is working during off business hours, and they've been celebrated for always going above and beyond, having such a big heart, or they're always available. I know that it is hard to hear those phrases and not feel like you're being praised, and I've definitely been caught in the complimentary trap multiple times before because it was flattering. It appeased the part of me that wants to be recognized and appreciated. The thing is with these phrases is that we are being praised for being boundaryless. I am a very visual person. I'm a very creative person. And when I think about the myth of the selfless servant, I immediately connect to the book, The Giving Tree. It is about a tree that gives its apples, its branches, and then its trunk until there isn't anything left but a stump, always waiting for the boy to come back. And this story resonated with me because it always felt like the tree was waiting for praise. It would always give what it could, and the boy would take and take and take, but there was never any reciprocity to the tree. We were told that this story was about love, but looking at it now with adult eyes and the experiences that I've had, it feels less like love and more like burnout on paper. The tree gave everything until there was nothing left, which is a vivid allegory for burnout. That's where we are going to examine today. We're going to talk about where the myth comes from, what it's costing us, and how boundaries can keep us from ending up like the stump. So grab your tea, unclench your jaw, and take a deep breath. And let's get into it. What I want to do right now is take us a little bit back and look at what selfless service is and where this ideology came from. So, selfless service is the act of helping others without expecting anything in return. It's about giving with a pure heart, not making anyone feel like they owe you something in return. If you look up the term selfless service, you will find a broad spectrum of fields and organizations that utilize, praise it, and put it on a pedestal as an exemplary example of the ideal individual. From organized religion to the military, they all contain the same underlying principles of selfless service, that it is either an act of humility, compassion, spiritual alignment, dedication, or commitment. Now, fair warning here, I am going to get a little bit deep into some philosophical ideas, but just bear with me. This does raise a philosophical question. Can any act of service be truly selfless, or does it always loop back to the self in some way? For example, identity, fulfillment, or a belief in that you're doing the right thing. If we look a little bit into the philosophical knot inside that phrase, selfless service, we start to understand the tension that it gives us in the right context. And we need this before we start exploring the myth of the selfless servant. To call something selfless suggests that the self can be erased or set aside, but can it? Immanuel Kant argued that actions can indeed be moral if they are motivated by duty rather than self-interest. But even here, the self is still present. It is the self that chooses duty. And then this is where the debate about altruism begins. Are we ever acting for others purely? Or does the sense of satisfaction that we feel when we're moral, aligned, or compassionate already count as a kind of a self-benefit? Let's take a second to consider the word service. So service implies an action performed by a self or another. It presupposes both an agent and a recipient. Without the self, service loses agency, and it becomes just an action in the void. So service requires self at some level. And this is where the paradox exists. If selfless means without self, and service means an act of the self, then selfless service is inherently contradictory. At best, it describes a state where the self minimizes its ego-driven concerns while still exercising choice. At worst, it describes the impossible because an action cannot be divorced from the actor. Philosophy has wrestled with this tension for centuries. Psychological egoism, going back to Hobbes, claims that every action is motivated by self-interest, even kindness. In this view, selfless service is impossible. Altruism, on the other hand, is defined as behavior motivated by the desire to benefit others for their own sake. But can pure altruism ever really exist? Utilitarians, like Bentham and Mill, sidestep the motive altogether. For them, actions are not judged by the intent, but by the consequences. So selfless service doesn't need to be truly selfless, it just needs to produce the greatest good for the greatest number. Existentialists, like Sater, take another route. Every act, he argued, is a choice that defines the self. Service always reflects the self, which means that calling it selfless can be kind of a bad faith and a way of denying our own agency. And then there are Buddhist and non-dual perspectives. Here, the self is seen as an illusion. True compassion arises not when we erase the self, but when we recognize that there is no separation between self and other. In this sense, selfless service is not an oxymoron, but a kind of a transcendence. So why does the phrase persist? Because it points towards an ideal. It captures the aspiration of serving others without calculating a personal gain. Yet the philosophical tension keeps it alive. We admire the ideal, but we also wrestle with whether it is metaphysically or even psychologically possible. So where does the selfless servant fit in this conversation of selfless service? How did the myth of the selfless servant become so ingrained in society and culture? Well, it's really woven fairly deep into the history of charitable work. A lot of early nonprofits and even some modern ones were shaped by missionary culture and saviorism. The idea was if you had privilege or power, your role was to sacrifice yourself to help those quote-unquote less fortunate. Paul Keevil, a social justice educator, actually wrote about this back in 2007, pointing out how charity models often framed giving as a kind of a moral performance. And who historically has been most often asked to embody this so-called selfless role? Women, especially women of color. Across history and into the present, women have been expected to shoulder the burden of care work, whether in families, communities, or institutions, and often without recognition. Frequently, they are without power and without meaningful protection. The expectations were to serve quietly, to serve endlessly, and to serve without questioning the imbalance of who benefits from that labor. This is where the figure of the martyr helper takes shape. This is the person who gives and gives until there is nothing left, who is praised for her sacrifice, but is rarely supported by her humanity. Feminist and activist scholars, including the collective Insight, Women of Color Against Violence, point out that this narrative of selfless service has been weaponized. It normalizes the idea that some people, particularly women of color, should carry the invisible weight of communities, workplaces, and movements, all while their own needs, safety, and well-being are overlooked. When we use the phrase selfless service, we are not just talking about an abstract philosophical puzzle. We are touching on a very real social pattern where the demand for selflessness has reinforced these systems of inequality. Stories shape how we see ourselves, and if we remember the story of The Giving Tree, a book that so many of us read as kids, especially those of us here in the United States, we remember that the tree gives its apples, its branches, its trunk, until all of that is gone, and all that is left is a stump. And the boy, whom the tree gave all of its life force to, sits on the stump, an old man, satisfied. I can't help but notice the parallels between women and men in caregiving roles and the inequalities that are frequently portrayed in these roles. In nonprofit work and community leadership and in caregiving, we are taught that being like the tree is noble. The more of ourselves that we carve away, such as our time, our health, and joy, the more valuable we become. The tree never once says that I need rest, or I deserve care, or I can't give you that. The tree never receives and is only depleted. Isn't that exactly what the selfless servant myth does to us? It convinces us that worth is measured by how close we can get to just being a stump, empty but applauded for our service. Exploitation dressed up as service is still exploitation. And listen, I love what I do, and I wouldn't still be working in the nonprofit field if I didn't. But something that I've had to learn over the years and take away is that having a heart and caring doesn't mean that you need to lose yourself. It doesn't mean that I should allow people to continuously take without filling my cup back up again. This work isn't martyrdom, and sometimes I think that we get caught in that trap thinking that it is. What happens when we live this myth, when we try to be the giving tree in human form? We end up hollowed out, devoid of everything. Living the myth in real life and in our real working lives looks like a couple of different things. Living the myth can be you skipping lunch because there's just one more client to see or to call. It also can look like a hesitation to use your PTO because somebody hinted that everything would collapse if you were gone. It also could be taking on tasks outside of your role because we were told that we wear many hats in this position. Now, the question I have for you is, have you been fairly compensated for the extra work that you're taking on? My guess is that 90% of you would say that no, you are not. We know that fair pay and raises can be very far and few between, and that there is a disparity between different nonprofit organizations as far as what the pay scales are. When asking about raises or higher wage, we are frequently met with the excuse that it just isn't in the budget cycle right now, but we're thanked for the hard work that we're putting in. But thanks doesn't regrow branches. It doesn't restore our health, give us back our evenings with our families. And right now, it's not covering the higher cost of living that many of us are experiencing. Research backs this up. Maslach and Leader in 2016 show that burnout isn't just about exhaustion, but a mismatch between what is demanded and what is supported. Nonprofit HR's 2022 survey found that nearly half of nonprofit employees reported being emotionally exhausted, and they named chronic overwork and a lack of support as key reasons. This isn't about not loving the work that we do. It is about systems that normalize the depletion as proof of a commitment. There are structural and cultural issues that need to be changed in this sector. When we allow this to become the accepted culture and we internalize the myth of the selfless servant, we lose our health. Insomnia, migraines, stress-related illnesses become more frequent. We lose our joy because when every day is survival, there's no room left for creativity. Ask yourself how many birthdays were missed, canceled plans, or how many times have you started to notice that you're pulling away from the people that you love? And this is all unintentional. We lose our impact because we get so drained that the work starts to feel flat and less productive. And this impacts us on multiple levels. Now, if you could, take a second to picture the giving tree zoomed out. Picture an entire forest of them, and each tree is shaped by the same story. Each one gives its apples, its branches, and trunk until what is left isn't the lush green forest, but a barren field of stumps. That is what happens in the nonprofit sector when employees keep giving without boundaries. One tree cut down might look like dedication, but a whole clear-cut field is a workforce crisis. The field is silent, stripped of growth, and just like a clear-cut forest, it can take decades to recover. And burnt-out workers take years to heal, or they leave altogether, and the ecosystem loses them forever. And that's the problem with the myth of the selfless servant. Gratitude without reciprocity doesn't restore us, and the system is designed to keep us giving without replenishment, and will continue to extract everything until we shift the culture. So where do we go from here? We've identified the paradox of selfless services, explored what the myth of the selfless servant is, and now, what do we do to get out of the cycle? We start by creating sustainable boundaries. I know that boundaries have a reputation for making some people uncomfortable because there are myths out there about boundaries and people who claim that they are setting boundaries but are actually limiting and inhibiting their relationships. Remember, there is nothing mean, selfish, or rude about defining your limits. It's your right to do as a human being, period. Some myths around boundary setting include thinking that if I'm setting boundaries, I'm being selfish, or that boundaries are a sign of not being dependable. And by setting a boundary, it must mean that you're angry. And if you do set a boundary, you are going to hurt other people. Something to be aware of is you may come across people who are being a boundary bully, which is somebody who wants what they want regardless of how you feel about it. These people don't like hearing no and might use strategies like guilt tripping to make you feel bad about setting a limit. The person who has the problem in this situation is them, not you. I want to propose that boundaries are the soil and the sunlight that allows you to keep growing. Boundaries are what make sustainable service possible. Psychologists Christina Maslach and Michael Leder, who are two of the leading researchers on burnout, and probably people who I will continuously reference as the podcast goes on, have found that a lack of boundaries is one of the strongest predictors of burnout in helping professions. Boundaries are how we honor ourselves and our energy and our clients. When you set boundaries, you are saying that you care enough to protect your capacity, that you are in this work for the long haul, and that you care enough to not let resentment replace compassion. So what do the boundaries sound like in nonprofit work life? You could say to your coworkers that you are unavailable after 6 p.m., This could be you preserving your energy for tomorrow. You could also protect your lunch hour and make sure that you take a full lunch break away from your desk without work next to you as you eat. This is a basic refueling, both physically and energetically. You can also redirect a client who crosses a line. This isn't being cold. it is safeguarding the both of you. That could sound something like, we can explore that concern at our next meeting, but for right now, the purpose of our meeting is to work on these things. And before the client leaves, you can go back to the original concern and set another meeting later in the week or whenever you have the next available time slot for that specific concern. And this both sets a boundary and an expectation, but lets them know that you are still going to address the concern and you're not leaving them hanging. Sometimes boundaries do meet resistance, and people get uncomfortable when the person who always says yes suddenly becomes somebody who says no sometimes. That discomfort says more about the culture and that individual person rather than anything about you and your worth. Imagine the giving tree if it had said, I'll share my apples, but I won't cut off my branches. I need them to live. Do you think the boy would have been disappointed? Probably. But the tree would still be standing and still providing food and shade in all of its living glory and for multiple people, not just the boy. Boundaries are about making generosity sustainable. And as Audre Lorde said so perfectly, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it's self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. So let's get practical. What does boundary setting look like on the ground? Because I know what you might be thinking right now. This sounds great and all, but what happens if my boss doesn't respect it? Or my team pushes back? Or my client gets upset? The truth is, sometimes they will. But that doesn't mean that the boundaries aren't worth it. So here's some real-life boundary scripts that you could use. Instead of saying yes right away, try saying, I'd love to support that. Can we look at timelines so it's realistic? When a client is pushing too hard, you could say, I hear this is urgent for you. Let's set up a time tomorrow when I can give it my full attention. Or when your plate is overflowing after being asked to do something, you could say, I don't have the capacity to take this on right now. Can we split it across teams? When you're leaving at 5, just leave. Don't overexplain. Just start small. You can pick one boundary this week to honor. Protect your lunch break, turn off your phone, leave on time just once. If you need to, write out a script for how you'll decline so that you aren't scrambling in the moment. If you need to, like me, you can practice that script in front of the mirror at home so that you get a feel for it and you're practicing. Boundaries aren't just one and done. They are like muscles. You have to build them by practicing one at a time. Then take notice of what happens and let me know what happened in the comments. If this is the first time that you have ever put boundaries up, be aware that the guilt might show. That is normal. Guilt doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. It just means that you're breaking a pattern. I like to say that a moment of discomfort is better than weeks, months, or years of built-up resentment. The other thing to be aware of is that sometimes when you're setting a boundary, it will reveal the culture around you. So if your workplace punishes you for saying, I need to rest, the problem isn't you, the problem is the system and the organization. And let me tell you, when you recognize this, it will help you determine your root values, your wants, and your needs. This will help you recognize if your current situation is aligned with your values and your needs. You may find that as you practice and doing boundary setting, it is going to test your strength and your resolve. But I want you to be aware that it is also going to test your organization's values. Don't let the myth of the selfless servant keep you from growing to your full potential. This week, take some time to think about these things. Where have you been praised for abandoning your own needs? What is one boundary that you wish people respected, but you've been afraid to set? And what would it look like to protect yourself with the same energy that you give everybody else? Take a breath, write it down if you need to, journal on it, discuss it with coworkers, close friends, family. Because I want you to remember that you are not a machine or a resource to be used up. Your task is to remain visible, grounded, and whole. Practice setting your boundaries because they aren't selfish. They are about staying true to yourself so that you can show up for others. This week, your goal is to protect your time and your peace. Thank you so much for listening to Burnout and Breakthroughs. If this episode resonated, please share it with somebody who needs to hear it. Subscribe, rate, review, and if you've got a boundary story, I want to hear about it. I'd love to include them in a future episode. Next week, we are going to dive into what nobody told me about working in nonprofits. Until then, be safe, breathe, and protect your peace. I'll see you next week.